live on Blog Talk Radio for Sports Club. I'm your host, Jeremy the Impact York. Joining me today, making his illustrious return, is the coach, Haywood Hill. How you doing, coach?
I'm doing great, Jeremy. How about yourself?
I'm doing spectacular. Already had our technical difficulty for the day, so we should be good to go for the next hour.
That is great.
Yeah, it's good to go ahead and get that one out of the way. always a fun time here on Sports Club. You guys know about our difficulties. Tons of things we're going to get into. There are a lot of physical battles in the NFL this week, as far as fisticuffs and such. There was a lot of verbal battles as well. Baseball lost a legendary player we'll get to. And, of course, we'll get to some Falcon stuff here in a little while. But, you know, where do you want to start, Coach?
Well, let's go ahead and start with Romo versus Mr. Sanders.
Okay, let's do it. And that's not Colonel Sanders. That's Deion Sanders. That's not Bob Sanders. That's not the Larry Sanders Show. This is Deion Sanders and Tony Romo. Want to get that out of the way. So I just want you to – we got to clarify because they'll light up the text line. They'll send us angry emails that they're confused. And so just to throw that out there. Now, basically what happened is we all know Tony Romo has been slowly getting his feet wet as far as being an announcer. I think he's on his way to being a really good announcer and play-by-play guy. And color analysis, and everything else he does. And Deion, obviously still being the media mogul that he is. Romo let a few things slide here and there, compared Marcus Peters to, or the lack of tackling by Marcus Peters of the Kansas City Chiefs to that of Deion Sanders, saying that Marcus Peters' effort would make Deion look like a great tackler. To which Deion come back and he replied and pretty much took some shots back. I think it was friendly fire for the most part, and I'm sure cooler heads have prevailed. But, Coach, what do you think about this whole battle?
Well, again, you're talking about professional athletes, and anytime that you're dealing with a professional athlete, you're dealing with a competitor. So although maybe Mr. Romo was doing it all in good nature, the radar went up for Mr. Sanders, and again, his competitive spirit and nature came out. I think a lot of times when people look at Deion's career, they fail to realize that he was a very good tackler. Deion by far didn't just whiff on tackles. He said that they paid him to cover guys, not tackle guys. I think that maybe was part of the segue in which Romo took that into consideration when he began to make that statement. But I'm sure that they've had an opportunity to talk since then, and I'm sure that it was all in just good nature.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. And, you know, we hear this all the time. Usually when former players are doing analysis, they will make reference to things during their career, which means that will be players they played with, coaches they may have coached with, or people that coach them, you know, people they know and such like that. So, you know, I didn't think much of this. Romo is, like I said, getting his feet wet, so I will defend him in that nature, and I'll defend Deion because it was warranted to verbally, especially on another show that he was on, kind of send some shots back. But I think this is going to be water under the bridge, and it's not like these two are going to continue this.
No, not at all. I think that, you know, it was just all in good human nature, and if it was anything that might have been from the standpoint of a riffle between them, I'm sure they got behind closed doors and quickly resolved whatever the matter might have been. But I don't think it was one of those types of situations. I think Deion just made it clear that, you know, don't come for me unless I call for you. So I think that was pretty much
right.
The end of that.
Yeah, I'm not getting very good stats because surely Deion was credited with more than 39 tackles. I think he had quite a few hundred or more. So thanks, NFL.com, for dropping the ball on having the wrong stat there. No, Deion had plenty more than that, and I'm not worried about it, and they're not worried about it. So let's get into the there were three different actual fisticuff fights on Sunday. a lot of this is teams that are getting frustrated. I think I've never seen A.J. Green react that way, and I remember him at Georgia. I've seen him close up. He is one of the most mild-mannered people. And for a second-year player like Jalen Ramsey, who is another guy who doesn't, you know, get people super fired up or anything like that, that whole situation was just bizarre to me. Were you able to see that one?
I was able to hear about it. I didn't get an opportunity to see it. But one of the things players have to be mindful of is, and my understanding at the play, it had nothing to do with the play that the player came in and he pushed A.J. Green and A.J. goes to the ground. And one of the things you have to be careful of, those type of hits or those type of incidental contacts or what have you, is that, you know, that's how players tear ACLs. And so if A.J. jumped up, probably the first thing popped in his mind is that this guy, you know, he hit me from the blind, or he hit me when the play was over, or it was unnecessary contact. And they're out there playing for their livelihoods, especially when you have to think about the sensitivity in New York right now with all of their receivers being out. I'm sure that's something that weighs on the back of all the players' mind, especially with the injuries as you get further and further into the season, as the injuries begin to mount. And so you take Deshaun Watson in his situation in a non-contact situation and a scenario in practice. So when you take someone like A.J. Green and you're just pushing a person who's not prepared to be hit, you know, they're all in the makeup of football, you're either hitting somebody or you're getting hit. And so when you're prepared for a hit, that's a little bit different. But when someone comes and shoves you like that and your body is off balance, you could have easily torn an ACL or a knee or anything, which could have been very damaging to his career. So, again, I don't think he was – I think it could have been handled differently. But, again, when you kind of catch a person off guard, you kind of have to expect the unwarranted to come as a result of that as well.
Right. And I'm trying to find the exact number because I know he is not appealing the fine. The weird thing was that Jalen Ramsey did not – fight back or do anything whatsoever. I believe he got tossed. He was tossed as the instigator. This happens in hockey all the time. So me being a big hockey fan, I don't have a problem with it whatsoever. I don't have the exact number in front of me, but I know A.J. Green is not appealing his fine. It was, I think, 10 grand or better for all the things he did. Another person who was involved in an altercation and is not appealing the fine is 49ers running back Carlos Hyde. He was fined a little over $9,000 for unsportsmanlike conduct. There was another shoving match / wrestling match that went on there. But the one I really want to talk about is the one in Tampa where at the time, Jameis Winston, who is nursing a shoulder injury, he's actually going to be sat down for a couple weeks to try to get that to heal. I believe they may be talking to Dr. James Andrews, the most famous person out of Alabama, about maybe looking into it in the offseason. The struggling Bucks, he was on the bench. He was not going to play the rest of the game. He actually left the bench to get into an altercation. This is something I think sports in general need to look at. That, to me, it should be an automatic ejection for leaving the bench area. I think, you know, Marshawn Lynch was tossed for it. He left the bench to get in the middle of this. And even though he's apologized now, to me, you shouldn't have players given that liberty.
Well, yeah, you have to also protect your career. I mean, if you're already an injured player, a wounded warrior shouldn't find himself on the battlefield, although his valor is commended. Again, they're team players. Emotions are high. Frustrations are setting in. The will to win is there, but then if you're injured, don't put yourself in harm's way. And that would be one of my biggest concerns. And when you look at maturity of players, now again, I'm not saying Winston is not, I mean, you know, that he's not mature, but I'm saying that anytime you're leaving a secured area to enter into an unsecured area, and i.e. be in the field at that time, you're putting yourself at risk. I mean, you know, you're already nursing a shoulder injury, so what happens if someone comes and shoves you to the ground from behind or grabs you by your shoulder pads and slams you to – at this point, it can very well be career-ending. So you have to be careful and be mindful of those things. You know, you want to have cooler heads to prevail in those situations. That's why you have officials on the field. That's why coaches get involved. But players leaving the sideline, you know, you're just asking for trouble at that point if you're injecting yourself into a situation, especially if you're injured already.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I just want to throw this out there as well, because we do things right here at Sports Club. Number 73 is reporting eligible. He did not come from the bench to get in the middle of this fracas we have here. Of course, number 73 for us is Mr. Reggie Walker, who joins us right now. You know, we were talking about Jameis leaving the bench to get in that altercation, and I just wanted to make sure that everybody knew you were coming in. You did report eligible, so welcome.
Thank you, sir. Hey, Coach, how you doing, Jeremy?
I'm doing great.
Yeah, we're doing good. That was bananas. That was bananas. I mean, but I caught the tail end, Coach, of your conversation, and you and I have talked behind the scenes about some stuff that I won't talk about on here, but nonetheless, I saw it personified, Coach. I'll just say that. I saw it personified in everything that we discussed. It was absolutely not something that he should have done, but those are the tactics. I mean, those are the tactics that when people ask, why hasn't Tampa Bay performed the way, you know, people expected them to? I think coaching has a lot to do with it because, I mean, especially on the defensive side, but it's the maturity level. That guy's always had some maturity issues, and when you've got the voice of the team and you're the franchise guy, everybody follows suit. So, wow. I did not expect that out of Mike Evans. I did not expect that out of A.J. Green. And I don't know if you guys have talked about him, but I just didn't expect it. But, again, when you're talking about Jameis is the franchise guy, and he's the guy that gets some hype before the games and so forth and so on, it just, wow, is all I could say.
Yeah, we could spend a whole hour talking about how eating W's really makes you want to play hard, but that's probably for another day. That's got by far one of the most bizarre pregame speeches I've ever heard, and I've heard quite a few. Have you guys heard anything like that?
No, I haven't.
I can't say that I have.
I was about to say, Coach, when you were coaching in the league and everything, if some player would have said, no, Coach, I got it, and started going into that, you'd have probably went, oh, you got it, all right. You got a place on the bench until you tell me what that's about, because that's it's just so out of left field. It brought me back to my early childhood when the Ultimate Warrior and Randy Savage would get in verbal battles in the then WWF, and we would have no idea what they're talking about. But let's stay and talk about the NFC South, because there is so much going on in this division. We thought it would be a tight four horse race. It's turning into a 2.5 to 3, and we'll get to the Falcons here in a minute. But staying right there with Tampa Bay, they have this thing where every 2 to 3 years they like to change out coaches. And you just said something about the maturity level there, Reggie, and I agree. You know, the whole time I've always said I thought Jameis Winston was going to be the more mature version of Cam Newton. It seems like that has kind of flipped. Cam actually showed some maturity this week and has been able to rally his troops. On the flip side, Jameis is starting to act like he's still a Seminole. So you guys see Dirt Cutter sticking around, or you think the Glazers are going to move on as they typically do?
I personally – and this may seem far-fetched, I see them moving on from Jameis before they move on from Dirk.
Okay.
I don't think that he was their pick or Dirk's pick. I think he was Lovie Smith's pick. And, you know, there's only so much you can do. Dirk, I mean, we saw it personified or played out in the, what was it, Hard Knocks, where Dirk is telling this guy what to do, and he just wants to go do the opposite. So.
Yeah, I agree, Reggie. I don't ever think that Winston was ever the pick for Tampa Bay. I think what Lovie Smith did was that he fell on the sword for him, admirably enough. He wanted that. He knew that he had the talent to be a one. He knew that he could bring some excitement into Tampa. And as a result, you know, I think that's why he's not a head coach right now in the NFL. But again, the situations and the dynamics of what Jameson was under his, they've changed. He doesn't have that head coach that can pull him behind a closed door that I feel that he comfortably respects, who wouldn't have allowed him to get away with that. So I think that's a part of the damage control issue right now with him, is the fact that he came in under a coach who understood how to handle him. As you see some players in the league like that, you have certain coaches that know how to handle certain type of players. And when he was removed as head coach, at that point there was no leverage in handling, you know, situations like that with your franchise player. You know, so I think that has a lot to do with maybe some of his acting out. But again, whether that's neither here nor there, you're a professional athlete, and you have to always conduct yourself as such.
Right, and we'll kind of pause this debate here. Coach, I know you have a pressing matter you need to get to, so we will bid you a good evening for the night and catch up with you next week.
All right, thanks, guys.
And, yeah, Reggie, where I'm going to continue this is part of the problem I always had back when I used to follow Tampa as much as I did is the Glazer family, as good of actual human people as they are, they're not football fans so much as they are soccer fans who own a football team. So a lot of times they're guilty of putting all the money into the soccer team. In the last few years, they've actually put a little bit into the Bucks. But in doing that, that's how I think they keep going through coaches like this. And I think it's an interesting take you said where they could move on from Jameis before they do Dirk Cutter. I actually feel like Dirk Cutter is going to be out possibly this year because they're, what, 2-6? And it doesn't look like there's a lot of victories left on the schedule.
Yeah, but again, you know, when you go back to just, again, as irrational as they are, I mean, who's to say they won't just move on from Jameis? And again, why would you go away from Lovey? I get that he had some of the, you know, some of the depressing seasons or less seasons, but you didn't really give him the opportunity to get his people in place before you let him go.
Right.
And I think just looking for that instant success, I mean, Mike Smith is not a guy that likes to develop players, so you can't rebuild it through the draft. They don't have the money to really go free agency like Mike Smith prefers. And again, you've got Dirk Cutter who is known to be the quarterback whisperer of sorts. He can't get Jameis to tie his shoes the way he wants him to tie them, much less do anything else. So I think the lesser of the evils is to kind of go a different route when it comes to, I mean, you've got Kirk Cousins coming out of Washington. You know, maybe you work out a sign and trade. I don't know how that would work. But, I mean, again, I think Jameis is probably closer to what Gruden likes versus Kirk Cousins, who probably fits more of the traditional style that Dirk likes, right? He looks a lot more like Matt Ryan than he does anything else. So it's a possibility. It's a possibility. I mean, they could go either way, like you said. You don't really know what route they're going to take, but something's got to change because they had high expectations and they didn't deliver on anything this year so far.
Right. Yeah, it's we could say the same thing about the Falcons, but we'll get into that in a minute. I think they can still right their ship. We all thought it was going to be Atlanta and Tampa Bay running this division this year, and the Saints, dropped the first two, and then now they've won 6 in a row. And then when Cam gets fired up like this, basically when he turns into Superman and he goes all Super Cam mode, he's just you can't stop him. And right now he's in Super Cam mode.
Well, that's game by game. I mean, that's game by game, and we'll talk about it in that, you know, Atlanta gave that game away. I don't think it was he going out doing it. I looked at some stats the other day. Even in the second half, they had the clock at the ball 20 minutes and 25 seconds of the entire second half. They had 3 points and 146 yards. So, again, it wasn't that he just took over. It was really that it was kind of given to him.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And it was just another game that, unfortunately, you know, like I said, we'll get into it in a second, but it's just another game that Atlanta should have had a W and gave it away, but they've been in so many close games this year that you could say that about almost every one of them. But I want to get through some of this other stuff first, and then we'll get into the Falcons towards the back end.
Yep.
I'm actually kind of excited by this because I've kind of been cheering for this guy the whole time through all of his troubles. Gordon actually reported to the Cleveland Browns. It seems like he has not only cleaned up his act a good bit, but Coach Hugh welcomed him back, said he's a different Josh Gordon. We like this guy, and he's been very open about he used to drink and smoke various things and take other substances before practically every game all the way to his Baylor days, I believe. So he's being very forthcoming. I don't know if he's going to write a book or if this is part of, you know, a 12-step process or something, but I just tell people, anybody who doesn't want to cheer for this guy, it's not the only person he's ever harmed is himself in doing this. So as long as he makes peace with himself and you know, I don't have a problem there. If you look at the numbers he has put up on the field, and he has had quarterbacks that we couldn't name if we tried right now throwing to him. Imagine what would happen if they actually drafted a good one in this upcoming draft and actually had, you know, a Josh Rosen or something throwing to him. He could lead the league blindfolded.
Yeah, I mean, talent was never his issue.
No.
That's for sure. And Hugh Jackson probably knows that now, and that, listen, you know, nothing else, you got to roll the dice on this guy because, you know, he's 10 times what Terrell Pryor was. And again, like you said, it doesn't really matter who's throwing to him. He can go get it. It's just, you know, is he really over the demons that have, I mean, that's a long time. And again, I'm not doubting him, but addiction is addiction, but that's a long time to be, in a mode, in a mindset where something has been so much a part of you. I mean, again, just the fact that he's able to acknowledge it now speaks volumes to where he is in the process. But, you know, I don't know that he, you know, time will tell. I won't say I don't know. I'll say time will tell just how much it really is what it is.
Right. Like I said, I've been kind of cheering him on, hoping he can write this, and he was able to deal with the demons up to this point. But we all know when you have substance issues, whether that be liquid or any other form of any substance, it's you never get cured from it. You have to deal with it from here on out. So we'll have to,
no doubt.
Like you said, we'll have to wait and see.
Yep, but all the best. I hope he does, because, I mean, it's a shame to see the talent go to waste like that. I mean, absolutely.
This is actually, luckily, through Mike Florio's many Pro Football Talk podcasts and such, I've been able to ask him a good handful of questions. Most of the time it's things we're going to ask on here, and it's I'm always curious to hear his take. This is one that he brought up on his morning show, and I asked him about on his afternoon show. And that is, it looks like Arizona, if they continue to kind of go south, and as long as Drew Stanton is your quarterback, you're not going to – you couldn't find north with the world's best compass. If Bruce Arians is out in Arizona, what's to stop Jim Irsay from making arguably probably the third best decision he's ever made in his life and bringing Bruce back into Indianapolis to work with Andrew Luck, which is what happened, I believe, Andrew Luck's rookie year, and him be the head coach?
Well, I mean, it works if Andrew Luck's on board. And I think, you know, some of the reports coming out about Luck is, you know, it's all now between his ears. There are some physical ailments still there, still persistent, still present. But, I mean, even aside from that, I mean, even Brissett is out there running for his life. So they still never really fixed the issue or the issues. I think they have an offensive line issue, and they don't have any running back. I mean, you know, a sound running back or running game. I can see that happening. But, I mean, is Luck still – you know, is he psychologically ready to come back and be what he was? And maybe sometimes it's just a coach. You know, the voice changes, right? Much like, you know, I've heard about Gary, and I'm sure you may have it on your sheet, but, you know, Gary Kubiak saying, hey, you know, I'm ready to – I would take on an offensive coordinator's role. There's been some conversation underneath in our circles is like, hey, you know, Dump Star can get this guy, and what changes, right? You know, how much better do you become? So sometimes it's just a different voice. So, yeah, I think it would be a great move. I would do it if I had the opportunity, just based on what on the history and the success in the history.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, and I agree that you got to see where Andrew Luck's at. Maybe Jacoby Brissett's who you start to roll with if, you know, something's going on with Luck. They have one of the most interesting – I think I hit on this last week. They have one of the most interesting scenarios. They got, you know, arguably one of the most talented guys in the league right now in Andrew Luck, who's going to come off IR at the end of the year. So there's one franchise guy. To me, Jacoby Brissett's a franchise guy. He may not be elite, but that guy is I guess, like a Donovan McNabb to a point. In the right situation, that guy's going to win you games. He's going to put you in the playoffs. He's going to do really good things. And they're probably going to have a top, possibly a top two or three, but at least a top five pick, so they could go get one of these other quarterbacks out of college. They have basically three potential franchise quarterbacks at their disposal. I don't know the last time something like that's happened for a team.
Yeah, but again, you got to address the real issue, which is the offensive line. That's been their issue for at least 5 years. Well, since Luck's been there, for sure. So, you know, you got to address that as well. But, yeah, again, having those top picks, if you've got the cap space, you know, there's supposed to be some great free agents coming out this year. Maybe you rebuild that way. But, yeah, I think they can't go wrong either way with Luck or Brissett. I mean, I think Luck is probably better suited for a franchise moniker, if you will. But you got to do something about that offensive line and go get a running back that's, you know, that's serviceable. Or that's a three, you know, maybe Tevin Coleman's coming out. You know, you got some guys out there that you can go get that, you know, can carry the load and help out.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. You know, for the sake of it, we'll move on from the Colts and go to a more winning franchise, and that's a lot of sarcasm in that. What is next for the New York Giants? Obviously, it came out earlier today that they're not going to make any kind of coaching, player, personnel, any kind of changes until after the season is over. But the reports also came out there's a lot of anonymous players who are going to different media members, a few in particular, and under the anonymous moniker are basically saying, we don't listen to Ben McAdoo and we're going to do everything we can to get him out. Obviously, Eli Manning is aging. I think more than likely this year will be his last year as a New York Giant. He'll finish with somebody else, if I was him, Jacksonville. But, you know, what's next for the New York Giants?
Yeah, I think, you know, now you start talking about rebuilding, right? And you got to rebuild with a different coach. I mean, when you got that type of talk coming out of the locker room, and it's not coming from just one area, it's coming from a lot of areas. But, I mean, we talked about Tampa Bay and the Glazers. I wonder about the coaching, you know, or the ownership with the Giants. And with Mara, I think it's Mara is the owner there. But, I mean, you know, Tom Coughlin was successful, but Tom Coughlin was a coach. He's a hard-nosed coach. And look at what he's done, you know, when he went down to Jacksonville. So he's not done. Oh, he obviously wasn't done or ineffective. He just had his way of doing things. And I think McAdoo's out for sure. I just don't know who's next, right? Who can you bring in that's going to make a difference? Like you say, now Eli's done. You got to go a different route quarterback-wise. You got to go into rebuilding at this point. And they've got a lot of money on that defense.
Yes.
A ton of money spent on that defense. So my guess is that they don't have a lot of cap space. Again, Kirk Cousins is another guy that's going to be an interesting selection from a free agent perspective. Maybe you get him now that – I was sure Kirk Cousins was going to San Francisco, but apparently that's not the case. Shanahan got his payback for screwing up Super Bowl 51. But at any rate,
that's still my favorite rumor, by the way.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, they got to rebuild at this point. But obviously, they just tanked the rest of the season because these guys aren't listening.
No. Yeah, they realize they're not playing for anything. They realize they're not going to catch the Eagles. They're not even going to catch Washington or Dallas. They are pretty much playing for draft picks. And a few of them will keep playing hard because they're those fringe guys that still want to be with the team next year. But, yeah, the guys that are secure and everything, they're literally just going to look at each other and go, I'm not making that tackle.
Right, right. And those guys that are in contract years, you know, who
right.
probably don't really want to be there anyway, they'll tank it a little bit because they don't want to get hurt. So, yeah, it's an ugly situation to be in. But I think McAdoo's gone, if not before the season's out. Maybe, you know, you get down to, like, the 14th game, and I think you see him out the door.
Well, especially if it finally gets up to management, maybe some of these players are going behind closed doors and let management know, and especially the Mara family, like, hey, we're not listening to him. And it's not just, you know, me in general. It's not just this guy sitting beside me here. It's not those things. It's like, yeah, that all 70 of us or whatever that are signed to your team are no, we're done. So, you know, we'll see what they're going to do. They have some interesting choices coming up. You know, they're going to have a top five pick as well. It may be time to finally find a successor or, like you said, to bring in a Cousins. I don't know if he'd go from Washington to New York, but money talks, and I don't think he's going to get it with the Redskins. So wherever Cousins goes, you know, maybe this is the stop for him, and he would be the stopgap until they can get that next wave guy.
Right.
Yeah, we got a little bit of time to do this. We are going to kind of go through the division leaders currently pretty quickly and try to figure out their chances in the playoffs their chances of making it all the way or what could potentially happen. We'll start with one of the easier ones, I believe, because I don't think Buffalo, Miami, or New York are going to catch them. The New England Patriots, they're not quite as dominant. They're still winning games. They are 6-2. They're not as dominant as they usually are, but to me, they're still not only playoff contenders at this point. You still got to kind of pencil them in for potential Super Bowl from the AFC side, right?
In an AFC championship, definitely. I think they get there. I think, you know, people aren't afraid of them anymore.
No.
So, you know, we'll see how that pans out. But definitely AFC championship, I think so.
Okay, well, which AFC team or which division leader of the remaining four, because there is a tie, do you think takes them out?
The Chiefs. I think the Chiefs can do it.
Okay.
I don't think anybody else. I was thinking the Raiders, but they've got their own issues right now. I think everybody was thinking the Raiders up front. Jacksonville is up and coming, but I don't think they're quite ready yet. I think the AFC Championship is the Patriots and the Chiefs.
Okay. I think you're sleeping on a team that I'll get to in a second. But, the Chiefs have got to figure out the same thing that the sleeper team figured out, and that's when you have a dynamic player like a Tyreek Hill that can do things like he did against Dallas, give that guy the ball more than five times a game. Give it to him 20, 25 times and just go, hey, show me something.
Yeah, and I think you're probably alluding to the Steelers.
I am.
But, you know, again, my problem with the Steelers is that Roethlisberger didn't really want to play this year. You know, what's going on in that guy's head is that was he ever really fully committed to even playing, right? So that's my only reason for not including him in the discussion. They're just – you know, which is great. I mean, with what I consider to be lackluster play, they're still in the conversation. I just think in the end, that guy was retired. They asked him to stick around. He did it for the sake of 221. They did it for the sake of the ownership. But I don't know that his heart's in it.
Since this is going to be great. Radio, I'm going to slide this message across our messaging system because I don't think I should say it out on the show, but that's my guess on Ben. It'll come across through our messaging system to you in a minute. Yeah, I agree. He basically got Brett Favre. He was pretty much sitting at home, and all of a sudden Yeah, I'm glad you like that. He was basically sitting at home, and they were like, can you give us one more year? Come on, we really, really need that extra year. And they're another team just like the Giants who have done nothing to replace him or to have a guy in
right.
place behind him.
And that's what I was thinking to myself is like, dude, you guys didn't do anything to go
no.
get that next guy.
Who is their backup anyway? I never can remember.
I couldn't tell you. I was sitting here thinking about it as we were talking about it. Like, who's the next
guy?
I don't really know who it is.
I think it starts
yeah,
with F, but I'm trying to find it somewhere.
Look him up.
Yeah, well, is he? I'm not sure what Stat Boy's even doing, so I'll look it up myself because it'll go a lot quicker. That would be. Oh, I didn't know they had Josh Dobbs, but Landry Jones is the answer to the trivia question.
Right? Who? I mean, come on.
Right. At least I know who Josh Dobbs is, but that's only because he played for Tennessee for a couple years. And that's Tennessee
wow.
Volunteers, not the Titans.
Wow. So, yeah, maybe they're going to get into the Kirk Cousins sweepstakes. Who knows?
That you know, he could be a Steeler. I can see that. Yeah, I agree, though. Jacksonville is good enough this year to win a first-round game. They're not going to make it much further than that because Blake Bortles is still their quarterback. And, you know, maybe – I don't know if they get in that sweepstakes for Kirk Cousins, but my goodness, if they did, he might break all of Brady and Peyton's season records in 1 year.
Yeah, I mean, it would be an ideal situation for him and for them, for sure.
It definitely would. Yeah, I would agree, though. Based off – I wasn't thinking about that with the Steelers, even though – you know, if they keep handing it to Le'Veon Bell and your backup plan is to get Antonio involved, the Steelers can go as far as their three main stars can take them. Their defense is decent. T.J. Watt is fantastic. He might eventually be better than J.J. just because of injuries. But I would agree the AFC championship is probably New England, Kansas City, and I think the winner of that game is whoever the home team is, and that's what I think it'll come down to.
Right.
NFC, I think there's a couple other no-brainers. I think you got to pencil in the Eagles because they're the most complete team I've seen, and I'm not just saying that because they have the best record. They are so much fun to watch every week. I'm very happy we can get them on TV in the local Atlanta area, and we're lining up a guest that is a huge Eagles fan, hopefully in the next couple weeks. This should be a lot of fun. I don't want to announce anything yet until we get that more than penciled in. But, yeah, I would say put them in the NFC championship. I think Dallas is playing for a wild card, and without Zeke for the next 4 to 6 weeks, you can go ahead and write them out, and Washington's not going to catch them there. Minnesota's pretty good, but they're about to swap over to a new quarterback who hasn't played in over a year. So good luck to Bridgewater, but you should stick with the horse that got you there. Honestly, I think it's going to be Rams and Eagles are going to actually fight it out in the NFC championship game. And I think the Eagles are a little stronger right now. If this happened next year, I think the Rams might could take them. Seattle will be in a wild card. And I think the Saints could win the division. And if Atlanta doesn't watch it, Carolina's going to nab the other wild card. What do you see?
Yeah, same thing. I mean, I think that going back, I don't think the Rams are mature enough to go deep into the playoffs. But I think the Eagles weren't that far away last year. And with Ajayi coming in, I think that was the piece they needed. And they're riding high right now. So, yeah, if I had to reluctantly pick it, I'd say the Eagles have the chance of going represent the NFC on this side.
Man, could you imagine if it ends up being the Eagles – and the Chiefs, I think that would be a very, very fun, entertaining watch for
early February. And then it's a new guy. It's somebody who's never won
yeah.
it. And right. that's what I like. You know, somebody who's never won it before.
Exactly. We don't want to fire coaches yet. We've done that in various other weeks. We pretty much let McAdoo know he's probably done. This is something I talked about with Coach before the show. If he's still on, we'll talk about it again. To me, the whole Aaron Rodgers-Green Bay thing, as far as if he comes back this year, I think it's an Andrew Luck type thing. about the time Aaron's ready to come back, if Green Bay is still in the race, I think you take that risk, because he pretty much dominates this relationship. He does about 70 to 80% of the work, and he makes everybody else better around him. And the Packers have kind of done like the Colts and not helped him out a whole lot around him. He's got a few weapons here and there, but there's a reason why they went from Favre to him, because those are the only two people on the planet, I think, that could have done something with this offensive roster he has. I do like Hundley. The guy can play. They're just having to cater the offense to him now, and that team is built for Aaron Rodgers. Do you see it any different?
No, I don't. I mean, and I think he's a passer, but he's just not mature enough.
Yeah.
I mean, so, yeah, I think he's a great long-term choice, but he's just not ready right now. Much like he was with Aaron Rodgers being there with Brett Favre. Same scenario.
Right. Yep. He was given the starting job in an unexpected way. And, you know, there's a little bit of a learning curve and some growing pains. Peyton Manning had the same ones. Brady wasn't amazing his first few years. I mean, it happens. And I'm not saying Hundley's going to be the next great guy, but I'm not saying he's not. He showed, and he's helping them figure out that they don't have to look for the Aaron Rodgers replacement quite yet, that he could actually be the bridge to the next guy.
Right. I agree. I think I like the kid's heart. I really do. I mean, even just watching what he's been doing. And it's not like Green Bay is stacked with a whole lot of talent, offensively or otherwise. So they've got some other areas. I think Mike McCarthy's time is coming to an end.
I don't think
he's the guy. Yeah, I don't think he's the guy that can coach a Hundley. I think they've got to have somebody a little bit more progressive than he is.
Yeah, I could see that. But we all know how the Green Bay structure works. And once again, Coach would be great. We might bring this up again next week. But maybe, you know, I'm going to put the call out right now, all you listeners. And if any of you guys are stockholders in the Packers organization, or you know any, feel free to hit us up. We'd love to have some of you on there. We'd love to get a general consensus, because it's obviously going to come down to a stock vote. The stockholders will get together and tell the committee what they think, and then the committee will do whatever they want to do. Pretty much the Packers are ran the same way the U.S. government is, in a weird way. But more than likely, they're not going to get rid of him. I mean, he's a fantastic coach, and it'll be proven that once he goes other places, once he goes somewhere past Green Bay, he'll still be successful. But, yeah, I think his tenure is almost done in Green Bay. There's just – he's done – between him and the GM, and I think he needs to be done too. But,
yeah,
it is that situation.
Yeah, I could think of a bunch of GMs that need to go. It has been some crazy – I mean, even in New York, get rid of McAdoo, but you got to get rid of their GM. You got to get rid of Reese too. You can't. You got to go with 2-for-1. Right?
I'm
wondering if John Gruden is going
to
– if he's going to enter the picture again.
I honestly think the only way John Gruden comes back to coaching is there's a new wave coming up pretty soon, the next wave of ESPN layoffs, and if they decide that maybe he's making a little too much money, if he's part of the layoff, which would be dumb because then nobody will watch Monday Night Football. But if he's laid off from ESPN in a cost-cutting measure, I could see him going back to coaching. But past that, he's not going to give up that gig.
Yeah, yeah. He looks like he misses it a lot, though.
Oh, he does. So does Tony Romo, but he's not enough to put a set of pads back on and start playing.
Yeah, yeah.
This is something I didn't have on the original readout because it's really played out in the last 24 hours or so. There's another battle. We talked about Romo versus Deion, and if you have anything you want to weigh in on that, we talked about that cooler heads are probably going to prevail. But this is Romo getting his feet wet, and all the former players, when they do analysis work, refer to people they played with and coaches they played for and such like that. So this was, you know, Romo just making reference to something, and Deion replying the way he did just to remind everybody he's still Deion. But, you know, what was your take on that?
Yeah, it was funny. It was absolutely funny. I mean, again, yeah, it was very comical. I think you coined it right. Romo's new to the broadcasting area. He probably, wasn't even thinking and wanted to be intentional about what he said. But again, that's Deion Sanders. It always has been, and it always will be. I think he's going to learn that there are just some guys that are untouchable when you start talking about, critiquing folks, much like the Steve Smith and Michael Irvin debacle. That was absolutely funny. Again, Steve Smith was voted how many years in a row as the one guy that nobody in the NFL wanted to fight? I mean, but Michael Irvin, again, has always been Mr. Inappropriate at times. And he got himself caught in it with a guy that wasn't playing around. So I hadn't heard anything else about it. So hopefully it just died out. Maybe they, had some wings and some beers and got over it. But, no, I don't think Tony meant it that way. But Deion, that's just Deion.
Yeah, it's as far as the other one, too, the weird thing about Irvin and Steve Smith going at each other is it involved fashion, and last time I checked, both of their wives pick out their clothes, and that's not a bad thing because probably the best I look when I go out places is when my wife has a say in what I'm wearing. So, more power to these great women that are behind them, but next time they insult each other's dress codes, they should figure out who is making those decisions.
Right. I was going to say that. You just hit it on the head. I've seen Michael Irvin wear some stuff, and I'm like, whoa. Who picked that out? So, I mean, pot meat kettle,
yeah,
right?
that's called Mrs. Irvin didn't make the trip that week is when those outfits appear.
Right.
And you heard me, Irv. You can call in and weigh in if you want. I'm pretty Reggie the same way. We have a lot of pictures of the way we dress when we go outside the studio, so feel free to pick at that if you want. Plus, Irv, we'd love to have you on. But there is a new battle, and I think this one is going to get – this one is go ahead and roll the pants up and roll the sleeves up. This one is going to get nasty. This could be Ali Frazier. This could – just pick your favorite battle. This could be David Goliath if you want to go that route, even though they're both kind of – they both think they're Goliath. Jerry Jones versus the NFL / Roger Goodell. Obviously, Jerry wants him out. And to me, it's like Jerry Jones could be the next Al Davis. Now, that was who took him under his wing. Al Davis did kind of mentor Jerry Jones as far as being an owner and being a vocal leader. I think Jerry's just had enough, and it seems like he was kicked off the competition committee or the one that was going to – not the competition, the committee that was going to help decide if Roger Goodell was going to get a contract extension. Now it looks like that's going to happen. Part of the reason he was is he feels like the NFL and Goodell lied to him about the Ezekiel Elliott situation. There's a chance he's going to have a lawsuit, the NFL. And the last owner to sue the league and sue his 31 best friends, so to say, was Al Davis.
Yeah, I have mixed emotions about this. I do think that there needs to be some consistency with how players are – handled. In Zeke's case, there wasn't any real evidence. I get that versus, the way he handled Ray Rice, and he brought that up, and that he didn't act quickly enough with all the right evidence.
Right.
And there's been some disparity between how players are being dealt with. However, one guy shouldn't have that much influence over the NFL. And I think that's where my problem is there's 32 teams. I get that there's revenue sharing and, the Cowboys probably has a greater portion of the revenue or bringing in the revenue or responsible for it, along with Kraft and, what have you. However, that just can't happen. I mean, this has become a dictatorship almost, right? And there shouldn't be these climactic issues going on just because Jerry Jones opens his mouth. And so I think this has to be a time where the other 31 owners have to say, enough is enough. And if you walk away, right?
Yep.
Do what you need to do. But we're not going to bow down because it's not going to stop. I mean, he put his influence in with the whole kneeling situation. So I have a personal issue with Jerry Jones on that regard. But just in general, I mean, this is supposed to be the NFL, not the Jerry Jones League. And I think they're going to have to do something to stand up to that. It's ridiculous at this point. Am I a Roger Goodell fan? No. But at the end of the day, one guy shouldn't be able to come in and influence a decision that should be made by 32 different owners.
Right. But we'll have to see how this goes. Like I said, this one is going to get dirty, nasty, interesting. And yeah. As a Cowboys fan, I feel like Jerry should back off a little bit here. I'm not worried about him losing ownership. They're not going to force him out like they did. Was it Donald Sterling or something like that in the
right.
NBA? It's not that kind of scenario. But I think sometimes you got to remember not to bite the hand that occasionally feeds you. And I would not want to make 31 enemies to take out one Roger Goodell.
Well, I think again, timing is everything. Jerry Jones has to also remember there's a collusion case that I think a lot of those records that are being subpoenaed that comes from Jerry Jones specifically, I think you're going to see some stuff come out of that too. That's going to put him on an even hotter seat just because of the nature of how he behaves anyway, right? So, yeah,
right.
I don't know that it's Donald Sterling level. I think he's got a reckoning coming already, and so the timing couldn't be worse.
Definitely so. And like I said, it's real interesting that Al Davis took on the NFL and kind of ticked off the other owners there for a little bit before his untimely passing, of course. And then now you have Jerry Jones kind of doing the same thing. I think it'll be a Robert Kraft or maybe even Arthur Blank that kind of goes, Jerry, how about we pick a different battle? I don't think this is one we should necessarily go this deep on.
Yeah, I can see the two of those guys you just mentioned as guys that I don't think they're going to bow down. I mean, Arthur Blank for sure isn't a bow down type of owner. And I don't think Robert Kraft is either. So, I agree with you. I think this one's going to get ugly before it becomes pretty.
Yeah. But let's move on to some happier stuff here. I know you have some limited time as well. Let's go ahead and get into the Falcons game. You were actually in Carolina for this one, correct?
Yeah, I was. I was in the end zone opposite of where Julio dropped the pass. So, and I was on the front row. Now, to that point, I saw that first pass that was thrown to Julio. It was in the end zone where he went and stretched out for it. And it took him a minute to get up. So I do think he is hurt. I think he'll play through it. But I don't think he's close to 100%.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And the main reason I would agree with that is it came out earlier today that even though Devontae was full participant in practice, Julio, I think, sat out for the second day. So we're going to have to keep an eye on it. It is a lower leg injury of some kind. I'm not sure if it's an ankle or a calf or something like that. But
Here
it is again, the Achilles heel for Julio, so to say, even though it's not his heel, it's always been his feet and occasionally a calf. So,
yeah, and you get that with speed players. And again, I think
right.
with the fact that Zeke's not playing, I think if Julio plays, it'll be limited. I think they'll go another route because, again, Atlanta's got so many division games coming up. I mean, this one matters from a record perspective, but it doesn't matter from getting into the tournament, right? You got to win those division games. And you know, they've only got two non-conference or non-division games left for the rest of the year. They can't afford to do it without Julio. So Sanu's going to have to step up or somebody else is going to have to toe the line. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Julio as a game day scratch on this one. Just because I saw him get up very slowly, And I was the first, you know, in the first series of the game, just about. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, across the board, I saw some things early that made me think, okay, they're turning the corner like I had hoped coming out of the New York Jets game. And then it's almost like that second half, they don't know what to do anymore.
Right.
Offensively. I hate it because the defense is getting a terrible, terrible rap. I think the defense is playing as well as, you know, if you had this the offense we had last year with the way this defense is playing now, I mean, Atlanta's probably undefeated at this point, right? Just because of the fact that this defense is really, really playing. They're just on the field too much. I mean, a lot of three and outs, there was a couple of perplexing plays that I was just like, okay, so it's 3rd and 4. And you're throwing the ball 40 yards down the field. I mean, it's those types of plays. Or it's 3rd and 13, you roll out, you get 6 yards, and then you throw it out of bounds. I mean, it's those types of things that I don't get. I mean, not being able to get a 3rd and 1 or a 3rd and 2 or a 4th and 1 or a 4th and 2. I mean, short yardage, and it's really very baffling to watch. I mean, you're moving the ball, and then all of a sudden, you know, you get 3 turnovers, and then you just forget how to play in the second half. It's the most mind-boggling thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I found out something from some sources. I had kind of already been thinking this direction, but I'm not going to claim that I was right all along about it. I heard this from some sources that know a lot more about it than I do and have seen it firsthand, close up, from the sideline. This is actually Steve Sarkisian's scheme. It's not Kyle Shanahan's. You know, initially we thought, and we actually heard that, oh, he's going to use Kyle's scheme and just put his own twist on it. And then we had heard, well, he's going to use Kyle's scheme and just continue to use it the way Kyle did. No, this is Sarkisian's scheme all the way around. So
yeah,
it's not necessarily the play call. And I've also heard that that Matt, because of that, Matt is given a little more freedom at the line. So when he checks out of some of these plays and decides to throw it 40 yards down the field, it's because he has decided to do that, and that's not necessarily the play call.
Right. So I've heard a couple of things along those lines, too. I heard that it wasn't Shanahan's scheme. It actually was Sarkisian coming in asking Matt, out of all of the playbooks that you've ever had to dissect and learn, pick the plays that you like, and we'll put them in the playbook.
Right.
I've also heard, which makes a lot of sense, that not only was Shanahan calling the plays, but Shanahan was telling Matt who he was going to. He's going to call X right, Jet 6-3. You're going to the X guy, right? And if he's not available, then you check down. So when you look at the fact that Matt's at the line, last year it was boom, boom, step. He's out, you know, getting the plays off a lot faster. That makes sense now because he knew where he was going before the play was even snapped. And it also adds fire to the fact that Matt was complaining about how long it took the plays to get in because Shanahan was literally customizing the play call to what he was seeing on the defense. So Brian Billick brought up a very interesting point, and he said Shanahan was such a master at the game that even his pre-snap movements and shifts was all to make the defense react so that he could get a better view of what was going on even prior to the snap. So, you know, again, that speaks volumes. And there's some arguments about, hey, you just – you know, Matt's always been known to be that guy that you got to coach him to a win. He's not that guy that can – take over as much, which now when we had some complaints last year, why is he not running a no huddle? Well, the no huddle is in Matt's hands, right? and that wasn't the game. That he knew, Shanahan knew that was not what he had to do. I've also heard that Sarkisian is having a problem understanding personnel changes. And it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, when I was at Alabama, we played the same 11 guys. We didn't change out people unless they got hurt. Versus now, the NFL is very different. So I can't foresee Sarkisian being here next year. It would surprise me, especially when you've got somebody like Kubiak who's saying, hey, guys, I would take a look at an offensive line. An offensive coaching position or offensive coordinator's position. You got to get somebody who understands the NFL. I mean, Atlanta has way too much talent. I mean, you see the tweets, you see the comments out there just like I do. You know, Sarkisian has taken the number one offense probably over the past 10 years and turned it into a dud. I just don't see how he can survive this. I honestly just don't. I'd be surprised.
Okay, but then that helps my other argument where I said that Matt Ryan is not Andy Dalton South, but he is actually Alex Smith with a slightly lesser arm, and we'd be changing up another coordinator to him, and then this would be another thing to add to it to where, I mean, he might have to go elsewhere to be successful because keep changing coordinators so much that he never has the same one twice, it seems like.
Yeah, I think if I'm GM, if I'm Thomas Dimitroff, I think what I would do is you look for that next guy. You change coordinators, but you find that next guy, right? So that he now starts to learn the system. Right? He holds the clipboard.
Yeah.
He hears the system. He does the system. So that when you – because, again, Matt is coming up to that point now. I think it's, what, the next 2 years where they're going to have to make a decision on whether they're going to extend him or not. And I don't think they do. I don't think you can. I mean, unless he goes and wins the next two Super Bowls, I don't think Matt gets extended. I think this is his – because he's showing too much that he's just not that guy. He's not that guy that can put the game on his shoulders and make the right decisions without being told what to do. And you just don't build dynasties that way. You don't.
Right.
You don't. And Arthur Blank is way too competitive for that. I don't think it'll happen.
I agree. And I'm going to go ahead and throw this out here as we finish up. Don't expect Atlanta to be in the Kirk Cousins Bowl. It's nothing personal to Kirk, but he doesn't fit what Atlanta's trying to get. In fact, like we're saying, Matt Ryan doesn't fit what they're wanting out of a franchise quarterback. So Kirk Cousins wouldn't work out. Overall wise, his community impact, I think, wouldn't do as well in Atlanta. They're going to go out and they're going to find that next guy. I don't know if he's in college right now. I don't know if he's for what it's worth, it could be A.J. McCarron. Who knows who it is, honestly. But
yeah, I could see that. A.J.'s a Georgia guy. He brings that Georgia crowd. He brings the fan base. He's been in the NFL a little bit longer. He has that grit, that mentality, that hunger. He knows how to win, right? And watching Julio get frustrated and rip up the sidelines and complain and yell and do all these things that he's been doing the last, three games is because Julio's used to winning. And you've got to have a guy who knows how to win. And so much so that he says, put the team on my back. Especially when you're the highest paid guy on the team, you can't keep doing what Matt's been doing. I mean, and mind you, there's been some drop passes. There's been all of these things. But then there have been some just flat out boneheaded plays, even down to, and I'll throw this out here quickly, because I saw it happen firsthand. When we were up 10 to nothing and we had gotten into scoring field goal range, Matt waved off the kicking team for the field goal. And that's when we went for it on fourth down. We didn't get it, and it just changed the entire complexity of the game. Everything went downhill from there. We could have kicked the field goal, been up 13-10, 13-0, had them on their heels. But, again, Matt, you call off the field goal team, you got to go get that first down. Bottom line, because you took points off the board. So he's being allowed to make those decisions, and it just hasn't fared well. It really hasn't.
Yeah, and we're pretty much going to end on a couple notes like this one. I'm going to leave everybody with one name to think about possibly that guy of the future here in a minute. Adam Schefter happened to drop this just a second ago, and I know you need to go here in a second, but apparently Arthur Blank is among the six NFL owners Jerry Jones is threatening with a lawsuit. So it seems like who needs this game this weekend? Who needs Dallas versus Atlanta? We might be getting Arthur versus Jerry soon, but I'm going to look more into this. I'm going to send you the link to this because all I'm doing is, I'm skimming over these few. This is everybody from 24/7 Sports to Bleacher Report to the Falcons Wire is all talking about it. I want us to dig into this for next week.
Yes, sir. I told you. Jerry, Arthur's not that guy. He's not that guy you can bully. He's just not. And
no.
So it does not surprise me that Arthur's one of those guys. It doesn't surprise me.
No,
he's his own
doesn't.
Man.
But before we get out of here, I want to say thoughts, prayers, and condolences to Roy Holiday's family. Died in the plane crash, so we're in his plane because he does fly planes. He was flying a small crashed in the Gulf of Mexico. That dude was really great. Forget what he did on the field. Even though he was quiet, he did so much for children and charities. That's the way I'll remember a good Doc Holiday there. And then
yes, sir.
I don't know if you've been keeping up with the Hawks much. Since my hoodie just came in the mail yesterday, I've officially bought in. I'm back on the bandwagon. I believe in these Hawks, and you will see me, I doubt courtside, because those connections quite aren't as strong in basketball as they are other sports for me yet. But, they had the big win Sunday versus Cleveland, and then they only lost to Boston by 3. It was like 110 to 107. So I think the Hawks are going to be doing some fantastic things. I really love this roster, and if you haven't got a chance to check them out, watch Hawks games. They're fun to watch.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I think we got the right GM now. I mean, I was a Danny Ferry fan. I would have, despite whatever, I think we would have been a lot further along if he had stayed. But I like what we have now. I mean, this guy has the right attitude. We got draft picks. We got good, sound, young talent. It's just a matter of time at this point.
Absolutely. And then, like I said, I'm going to give you guys this one thing to think on. Everybody listening, and of course you, Reggie, and I'm gonna send this out to Cody and Coach as well. Don't weigh in on it yet. We're gonna tease this for next week. But think about the potential guy for the future here in Atlanta, Lamar Jackson. Let's let that simmer.
Okay.
Let's let that think about it, because we both would have knee jerk reactions. I did when I initially heard it, but it's actually changed a little bit, but. We'll think about that. I'm going to make a note of it. Stat Guy is already making a note of it. Look at that. You're doing good, Stat Guy. He actually made a note of it. We'll talk about that next week. But, this was fun. We had another great discussion. Coach was able to join us for a little while. Reggie, it was good to have you back on.
Yes, sir.
And for the coach, for Reggie and myself, this has been Sports Club. We'll see you guys next week. Go Falcons.
Yes, sir.
Let me see you dance. Push it up, push it up. Let me see you dance. Wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, yeah. 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 Yeah, 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 yeah,
a lot better when you win.